Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and it is 2025. And what we need to do is we need to cover some stuff that we never covered before, but let me really quickly cover the obligatories. Don't forget, folks, that debt is fraud. When government is doing 90% of the stuff that they're doing, they have no authority to do, that is all fraud. So the money that's being expended is fraudulent, okay? They do not have the authority to do this. And so the fact that we're pending this financial crisis under whoever's watch it is, you know, whoever's going to be the guy in charge. And I find it ironic that we're basically plummeting forward under what would be perceived as a conservative president. And you just remember, it's always the opposite side that gets things done. Remember, it was the Democrats that got a lot of things done that you would have thought the Republicans would have done. Like most people think the Republicans are war hawks. The wars that we've engaged for the globalist causes have been from the Democrats. So going through the parties, going through how, you know, we've been duped all along the way is probably important. But let me keep on going through the obligatory. I've got two more things to cover. You are welcome to actually initiate your own prayer circle if that's what you want to do. I know there's a lot of people that believe in prayer, and some people believe, you know, that prayer is a personal thing, and some people believe that having prayer circles. So whatever it is you believe, please do not exclude seeking and appealing to heaven to engage in this cause. So if you do create a prayer circle, you want us to put it on our website, we'll put it up there. And as a matter of fact, if you notice, we're going to have a commingling at this point in time. I'm not going to go through the process of creating an archive for 2024, at least not for the next few weeks, because I'm hoping I can find the time to migrate the website to something that is a little bit more suitable for you who use handheld devices. Now, it is my begging and pleading you to get off of handheld devices for your computing. Quit accessing the internet in everything you do. This is how they create digital footprints, and this is how big tech does, you know, if you didn't know, they're spying on you. And they're giving all this information straight to the government. So, anyway, the last and final thing is your campaign begins today. If it hasn't started already, you need to start thinking of a campaign. And I'm not talking about going out and getting signs. I'm talking about going after those who are in public office and calling them out for their atrocities. You know, when you have a nation that is constitutionally illiterate, every single one of these people, as a matter of fact, excuse me, I have to acknowledge that there are lots of public servants that really do not like me because they do not like the fact that they don't understand the Constitution, and but they're constitutional. They know the Second Amendment's important, and this is important, but they really don't support the Constitution fully because they don't know how. I think many people thought that they were doing a good thing in continuing this migration of currency from paper to electronic to now digital. They didn't understand. There's lots of people who know not what they do, and they're doing what they're told. That has to change. The mantra has to be, you better start asking. If you're not asking every step of the way, is this constitutional? What do I do? In other words, if you're a public servant, you need to be going back to your party. You need to be going back to the people, your constituents, and say, they're asking us to do this. Is this constitutional? Don't ask if they would like the, you know, this opportunity of getting federal funding for this. The question must be centered on, is it constitutional? And you need to make sure that the answer coming back isn't, oh, that'll be good for us. It has to be, yes, it's constitutional, or no, it's, and why? Why is it constitutional? Why isn't it constitutional? This is how we have very direct conversations with public servants so that they understand whether they're fulfilling their oath of office or not. Folks, it states they're obligated not to support their constituents. They're not obligated to take care of administrative matters. Their number one obligation, because I had a conversation over this where I've got conservatives that are really upset with particular politicians because they didn't take care of administrative matters. And I'm going, as long as they're not violating the Constitution, then, you know, throwing that person out is like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. This is actually a good person. But sometimes change is the rule of the day. And who am I to think that, you know, Madison could, you know, only provide so much to this nation when actually he continued to serve, he continued to provide. And that's what we need from everybody. But anyway, I don't want to confuse all these things. Your campaign begins today. We need to start holding people accountable. Now, what we have been doing over this conversation over Trump has been talking about the Monroe Doctrine. And so this commitment going into the inauguration, we're going to try to talk about all of these very specific things. On the 15th of November, we talked about the invasion. On the 18th, we talked about the currency and the digital currency, the fiasco and everything else, and getting us back to gold and precious metal. November 22nd, we talked about the full removal of the UN and subjugation of all, or basically or eliminating any subjugation to any international treaty, both domestic as well as foreign. Yes, there are international treaties that would be considered domestic. But anyway, the 25th of November, we talked about the immediate appeal to the states, getting them to wake up and start doing what they need to be doing in helping them restore their Republican form of government. The 29th was, and this all in November, the 29th was all about the lockdown and basically the reforming and the reconstituting of the Department of Justice. In other words, it needs to be completely broken down and it needs to be completely retooled and refocused on demanding and actually going after every public servant. Their focus should not be going to states, not be actually suing, but actually holding public servants accountable to their oath. That is the biggest crisis that we have today. That is absolutely the biggest crisis we have, because the reason we're in a constitutional crisis is because we do not have any public servants, except for a very few, that are doing everything they can to get to constitutional compliance. And we actually have real hope in Wyoming this year of getting that legislation passed. The problem is, you know, you can give birth to something good, but if you do not nurture it and if you do not follow the spirit of why you did that, then it's just lipstick on a pig. And the infant mortality of that act will actually creep in and it'll die on the vine. So on December 6th, we talked about state sovereignty and the ability to sell land and any form of resource within the United States. And then on the 9th, we talked about restoring impost taxes and disbanding all foreign holdings in America. And on the December 13th, 16th, and 20th, and on the 23rd, we talked about reconstituting our national security system. In other words, getting back to restoring the militia and dismantling all federal enforcement. All federal enforcement needs to be dismantled. You know, the reason why Thomas Jefferson and James Madison didn't go after the federal enforcement, because they didn't create any. Right? So had they created something, then that would have been even a greater threat. Because we just covered, Tammy and I just covered the Kentucky-Virginia resolutions, as well as Madison's report, as well as Madison's notes on nullification. Had they actually created the IRS or the ATF, or they created this press police that going around and actually arresting people that were printing things in the press that were federal agents and not using the state authority, then they would have actually called that as another violation. It would have been even a greater crisis to them, because the Constitution clearly delegates the authority of execution to the states, which is why the concept of nullification got quickly perverted to say, we can just ignore it. We don't have to follow it. We'll ignore it. And that's why Madison wrote such a lengthy article about that concept and that process. It must be interposition, period. If you're supporting the Constitution, you must enforce it. And that's what interposition is all about. It is enforcing the law. It's not ignoring it. It's not trying to change it. It's not trying to preempt it. And I really hope that this year is another very fruitful year. But there's things that are weighing on me that make me believe that someday soon I'll probably be outed, because I'm not going nicely into the year, and I'm not going nicely forward. What do I mean by that? I'm actually really pushing back. I'm pushing hard in the state I live, and I'm calling out people. And 9 times out of 10, you don't want to go to the bathroom close to where you live, type of thing, if you understand what I'm saying. You know, dogs don't like to have their food and their bed right next to where they, do their duty. And so you tend to actually, when you upset people around you because you're close enough to them, they might be able to reach out and try to out you and so forth. But I am not trying to out myself, but I'm not necessarily afraid. I'm not going to run from the fact that I can be outed. And so, because that basically shifts everything to, a new level of security for me. But bottom line, the enemy is real. The cause is real. And we cannot shirk our responsibilities and our need to do what needs to be done. Now, today, we're going to wrap up on the Monroe Doctrine, because on December 27th and on the 30th and the 3rd, we basically started addressing Trump's Christmas message. And I figured the best way to address that is to talk about the Monroe Doctrine. And so next week, or on Monday, we'll be talking about something completely different. And I believe that the best thing to talk about is constitutional oversight over the federal government. And we want to focus on just specifically the intelligence community. So, if you think I'm going to call, Snowden, Edward Snowden, a hero, a national hero, you're wrong. I mean, that's just no way that guy did anything to help America. And as a matter of fact, he was a narcissist, and I will get into that down the road on Monday. But today, I want to wrap up on this Monroe Doctrine as such that we want to actually help you understand what Trump needs to do. Okay, so to those nations, Trump needs to basically go after those who are aligned with hostile nations, such as China, Russia, and those types of nations who are literally the evildoers, the pot stirrers. I mean, America has been a pot stirrer. But supposedly, we've been the good pot stirrer. If the government doesn't have the authority to pot stir, then whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter. It's wrong and wrong. Wrong means wrong, which means that it is bad when nations are actually, engaging in manipulating other nations. It's just wrong. Whether it's for the good or for whatever the perceived issue is, and actually the reality is it's never really truly for the good, it's truly for the globalists. Because they're the ones that have been manipulating all the nations and pushing them towards this homogenization of society. And so what we need to do is we need to get Trump to actually identify those nations that have aligned with hostile nations and let them understand that America will defend itself and its interests, and that there any nations that are opening their arms towards these hostile nations, just, you know, pay note that we will have, and we have this inalienable right to survival and our perseverance. In other words, we will ensure, we will guarantee that we will not allow a threat to actually grow and persist. I mean, when we look at the Cuba incident, you know, it seemed like people at least understood the Monroe Doctrine, because what did JFK do? He actually deployed a blockade. I was going to say a barrier. It's both start with a B, right? So he deployed a blockade of ships. That's exactly what they talked about during the Monroe Doctrine. That's why we read it for you. We have the ability, folks, if you haven't looked, go look at America's Navy. We have, and we should be continually building our Navy. Because moving forward into this new brave world of, you know, the globalists and everything else, we are going to become the world's enemy once again on the globalist and the, I'll just say, the manipulators, because those who control the media and so forth. But I believe the world is waking up. There's still areas of the world that aren't, but don't think that China is in love with the fact that they're being geofenced and that the heavy hand of tyranny is controlling them. They're now at a point where they can't even have a Tiananmen Square because we have turned our backs on them. But I believe that if we actually create the invitations, if we create the right conditions where Taiwan actually decides to have an election, where we actually start building the nation outside of the Western Hemisphere, where nations in the Eastern, the Northern, Southern, these different hemispheres of the world that say we want to extend the constitutional republic to our nation, where the people desire to make, we're talking about a significant change. We're not talking about completely changing their culture, but we are talking about changing their language. We're talking about changing their laws. We're talking about not necessarily changing their customs, but their customs have to align with the Constitution and liberty and the liberty of others. Self-dignity, self-sovereignty, self-liberty. We have the ability to actually admit any state in the Union that wants that for themselves. Now, there's not going to be any ruler that wants to do this. Remember, one of the things we've learned and one of the things we've been teaching is the fact that the states, the big states that had, you know, a lot going on where they, you know, they had these little cabals, they did not want to become a part of the Union because it would have given, you know, they would have had to surrender their power. They would have had to surrender this base that they have. And that's why many of these nations will try to use their military, what have you. But I'm telling you, if the people, the good people of these nations actually stand up and there actually is a coup, they actually successfully vote to become a state. The people vote to become a state and the government doesn't want that to happen. Then we'll have to quickly mobilize to go in there and stabilize that nation and move it towards and basically have new elections to appoint new people and so forth. Bottom line, we're talking about shifting the axes of the world towards liberty. The axes have been pushed and pushed and pushed since 1776. And I'm just saying this, folks, because the framers did not understand the Constitution. They understood that it guaranteed liberty for all of us. They never thought the need for actually extending liberty to the rest of the world, because they never thought that the world would become so evil, that people would become so desperate and willing to shake off, you know, their language, their laws, and in some of their customs so that they can live free. Just imagine that. They couldn't imagine such an evil world. And I'm telling you, folks, we're living in a time that, I mean, the Bible calls it the dreadful days of the Lord because it is so evil. There's never been a time where there's been a large body of people that have been used for harvesting their organs so that evil people can continually living a riotous life and destroying their next liver. Imagine, you know, this infanticide. I mean, infanticide was always that litmus test of how dark a nation would become. And it is now just completely accepted because science just allows it to happen. You know, well if there's a possibility that child is not the right gender, if that child is not, you know, going to be completely healthy, and the fact that we're actually, you know, playing these games that are suiting us and actually violating these God's law. So we're at that point, folks, where we now have the opportunity to offer this liberty and this protection. Now, I know that there's lots of people that will maybe not like the idea that they won't be able to have these abortions, you know, regardless of those nations. But I honestly think that people that have lived under that heavy hand of tyranny in China, and I think India is now getting to that point where they go, you know what? You know, the opulent may want to have the selective family, but the poor, they don't want to be they don't want to be oppressed and constrained. And the majority of the people, folks, are the ones that are being oppressed and constrained. It's this this burgeoning middle class in China. I mean, you got to remember that China's billions, right? There's a billion plus people there. When you have that many people, they probably have an equal middle class to, you know, much greater than the middle class in America, much greater. And that is a very limited middle class, and they're very controlled, and these are the ones that are completely co-opted, and they're promoting the Communist Party agenda. The only way you get to that level of middle class to allow to have some real privileges is you have to prove your value to the state in basically identifying the threats and going, you know, naming names. I mean, that's where we are. Anyway, let me go back to this whole point. To the people of the Monroe Doctrine, to the people of those nations in the Western Hemisphere who are being oppressed, where their nations are oppressing them, we must invite them to consider an election. And many of these nations will be neighboring, you know, like Venezuela, neighboring Panama, neighboring these nations that are already aligning towards China and Russia and so forth. You know, we've not actually maintained this Monroe Doctrine for a long time. We've actually created a laissez-faire world. And everybody thought that was good, but it was never really laissez-faire because the globalists, i.e. our government along with other governments, have been basically playing these games. So bottom line, we need to actually start basically inviting them to consider an election so that they can guarantee liberty for themselves and their posterity, that they can move forward instead of having to flee and run to America. They can let America come to them. We're not creating a welfare state. We're not coming down there to take care of them. We're going to make it so that they can have a free market, so that they can actually have a fair playing field to operate, where there's no more of these cartels, that there will no longer be a toleration for crime and organized crime, that the rule of law will extend outside the United States to all new nations that come into the Union. Now, there's conversation that needs to be done on this, and I'm not going to have that now. But we need to talk about, you know, how this will affect the Senate, the House of Representatives, and so forth. But I want you to understand one thing. If the Department of Justice is going to hold everybody accountable, that nobody can do anything that creates advantages or advantages for corporations, advantages for states, because you can't do that. It's not allowed. Doesn't matter how many real nations that come in and finally adjoin to us, it's going to take them time. Many of these nations, you know, I don't know how many of them have a literacy rate or what their literacy rates are, but I would believe that many of these nations are so poor and destitute that it will take almost a generation or two to finally get there. So let me finish up when we come back, and then what we need to do is I need to talk about unity and uniting in 2025. And then we need to get into the scale of liberty, and even more so, when I come right back, because I'm thinking about it, I will talk to you about this bumper music that I always use and why do I use this particular piece. You need to know. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what needs to happen is Trump really needs to start sending this message to help everybody understand that these dictators, these rulers, these governments that these people in the Western Hemisphere, even Canada, are basically doing the bidding. Now, Canada may be a prideful nation, but I think many of them are already realizing that they're being taxed to death. And so all Trump has to do is basically help people understand that by inviting them to consider joining the Union of Liberty and basically checking out of the United Nations, ask them, are they really better off today as a nation because they've joined the United Nations, what, almost a century ago, and they're still having the same problems? In some cases, it's even worse, much worse. And so crime and depravity has only gotten worse. And so the plea to these nations is the guarantee of liberty for themselves and their posterity, that they no longer need to be tossed to and fro from anarchy to despotism and tyranny. And therefore, President Trump, and actually President Trump and the president themselves actually have the constitutional authority to set the tone and foundation of nations and foreign affairs. And what I mean by that is he can actually lay this foundation and make it impossible for a globalist to ever obtain the office of president in the United States ever again by actually standing up this Department of Justice and keeping every politician accountable to their oath. Folks, if a politician is of basically fulfilling their oath of supporting the Constitution, we'll get into this, but if they're truly supporting the Constitution, then there's just no way they can actually subvert, they can make themselves rich. There's no way they can actually, you know, drive any agendas that are outside the boundaries of the Constitution. It's one thing of being able to, you know, declare war, but that's not an easy task for one person to do that, nor is it easy for a president to necessarily do that, because he can't do that. And getting back to this power of executive privileges and so forth, the states, this is why I mentioned that Trump really needs to get the states to step in. We don't live in an age where the states are completely blind to what the federal government and the decisions that they're making is happening, and that it takes weeks, if not months, for all this stuff to basically get transmitted out to the states so that people of the states even know. It's one thing maybe that the state legislature knows, that the people of the states don't even know. You may have journalists that will, if it bleeds, it leads into the newspapers. But back in those days, getting information in details took a lot of time. That's gone. The ability to transfer massive data today with this high band, or this broad stream internet, and the ability to transmit globally, come on. there's no need for the states to actually sit on their hands. There's no need for the states to maintain this passive role, when clearly Madison said that their responsibility is to oppose every infraction. In other words, the states need to get into the federal government's grill. We, the people, need to get into our county's grill so that the county will get into, our county representatives will get into the state grill. Because if we are actually effectively working across the counties of the state, that means we're actually driving the state. And if we're driving our states, plural, then we're driving this nation. And we've assumed our proper role in the self-governing system. The self-governing system is, we must keep them in check. It's about accountability. And as long as we allow this free reign of despots like Obama, the Bushes, and so forth, people are going to die, and it's not going to end well. It is not going to end well for us here in America. You know, we don't have to basically, you know, we don't have to be trampled underfoot. We do not have to allow that to happen. We can take a stand, but we have to unite. And I think Trump can actually be a uniter if he cares, if he's really there to do that. This is why the focus on this Department of Justice, I can't emphasize this enough. They need to be broken and reformed and be the sole enforcement office of those who are in office. who choose to violate or attempt to violate or even give aid. In other words, they don't do anything. They vote against it, but they don't hold them accountable. That right there is one of the biggest problems, is because everybody is so corrupt because I don't want to be held accountable. I'm not going to hold them accountable. That's got to end. Folks, that has to end. So Trump needs to lead the people in demanding the full enforcement of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, by using the Department of Justice and creating this message down through the states to the counties. Literally, to the counties. Because if he understands the foundation of government, we the people are that. And the government that is closest and supposedly dearest to us is the county government. So once we actually start moving forward and actualize Section 3 of the 14th Amendment as the rule of law and the domination of holding public servants accountable, this will once and for all silence the critics of the 14th Amendment. Because this is what will turn America around that corner and moving towards actually a limited and defined government. The bringing forth the facts of the states controlling citizenship as another issue, just bringing forth this fact that the states must control citizenship, that it really has to start with them because that was how it was done. I think by expediency, the federal government said, well, we need to do this, and they bypassed the actual constitutional process. Because bottom line, if a state feels that a person should not be a citizen of that state, there's no way they can be a U.S. citizen. And so, actually, the way we have it today, there's no reason why Wyoming and some of these dark red states can actually look and say, you know, Bill Gates, he can't be a citizen in the state of Wyoming. He cannot come here and be a citizen and or buy property or anything like that. Because we see and perceive him as a threat because of his insurgency against the Constitution. Wow. Let states drive this. And as a matter of fact, then what we're going to see is a lot of people not able to vote anymore or inject themselves into our political process because they are the cause of subverting us. This will help us move towards making all elections local once again. So as we go through this, one of the things that will actually be interesting, because there will be some states that will not like this the purging and purifying of government in America. The state of California may actually try to secede. There may be other states. Vermont might try to secede from the Union. And here's the thing. This is the beautiful thing about the Constitution. if the Constitution is being honored and not being violated by the federal government, and they're actually enforcing compliance of the Constitution, then no state can secede. The only reason states can secede is when the federal government is violating the Constitution and or not holding other states accountable for, you know, maintaining and enforcing the rule of law within their states, like California. I mean, Oregon, if they were constitutional, could actually have an argument to say, hey, if you're not going to hold these guys accountable, I'm out of here, because they all have to be held accountable. This is why the importance of the Department of Justice in holding every public servant, not just federal, but we have to focus on Congress first, then we have to go to the judiciary, and then we can start cleaning up states. As a matter of fact, after we get Congress, we can start cleaning up states too. But the judiciary, because the judiciary may be this broad webbing, it's not huge. And it's not going to be this, you know, this major shift. Just imagine getting rid of so many people in Congress today. Boom, 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 just out the door. The Department of Justice has just escorted these people out the door and out of D.C. Wow. Now, all of a sudden, the states are going to have these flurries of replacing. And the message needs to be, if the person you send is going to try to violate their oath of office, like the person we just got dismissed, then we're going to dismiss that person too. You don't have the ability to elect and put people into office to actually go and subvert their oath of office. If you can't understand the beauty, the importance, and how integral the oath of office is from the very beginning. We covered this in the ratification debates last year, and we'll cover it again this year because we're going to dive into this. The oath of office was such a significant factor. It took James Monroe from being an anti-federalist or an anti-constitution ratifier to actually a person that ratified the Constitution. It was that important. Even though they didn't have in the Constitution the real teeth, the 14th Amendment gave us that. Now, back to the music, because I said I was going to get into that, and I just wanted to dive into this and finish this off before we go into the scale of liberty. The music that I play is called Fanfare for the Common Man. It was written by Copeland. I believe Aaron Copeland was the name, because I'm really bad with names. I sometimes confuse Aaron Copeland with Stuart Copeland of Police. Anyway, they're definitely not the same person. But Aaron Copeland was sought after by the vice president. I forget his name. It wasn't Truman. It was the one before Truman. Maybe Wilson or something like that. But the vice president was trying to create a musical piece that was basically the welfare for the common man, or fanfare for the common man. And this fanfare for the common man was all about collectivism and getting people to unite as a single body of creating a democracy of communism. In other words, this song was commissioned by the Vice President of the United States to use as a majestic piece that would actually invoke people to surrender their individuality, their individual sovereignty, individual liberty to the collective. That's exactly what the FDR administration was doing. It was laying the foundation of invoking communism within the United States. And so bottom line, and this is what they were doing. I mean, this was the beginning of cradle-to-grave healthcare and all those types of things. All of these ideas of communism were being rooted in the federal government and being planted throughout the states. In other words, there were a lot of operators, and nobody really understood what the heck was going on. I mean, hindsight being 2020, yeah, we see this, but the greatest generation was completely oblivious to this. And the greatest generation, to their grave, majority of them did not realize what they did to America, because they too had been, I'll just say, enticed by the fruits of handouts, by the fruits of entitlement, and this beautiful safety net of being the most powerful nation that can take care of you. It was not, and when Benjamin Franklin talked about the nation that can give you everything, can take everything from you, that doesn't happen overnight. In other words, it doesn't happen to the people that start getting everything, because that is a slow transition. And it takes generations. And as we see, this has been a very evil concocted plan that only those people, because America had a lot of pride that they didn't want government to take care of them, but they didn't stop government from doing it. Well, that's kind of a good thing. It's a nice thing, a chicken in every pot, right? Isn't that nice? And so as we look at, you know, using this piece, this musical piece, to actually call and rally the call, instead of a fanfare for the common man, this is a call for liberty, because I believe that it can be equally used in the antithesis of its design. In other words, we can actually use this, I believe, as the call for actually standing up and demanding our liberties and demanding our sovereignty and holding our public servants accountable. Why not? And so there you go. So that's why I play that all the time. Now, let me move forward into this call for unity, because I don't get a chance to talk about this that often. But you hear me actually poke people in the eye, poke organizations in the eye. There's lots of organizations. I can't even list them. If I sat down and started listing every organization, like Moms for Liberty, Moms for Liberty are not uniters on the Constitution. They may be going out and doing what seems to be really good things in combating government. But as long as we waste our time on little myopic issues with these little victories, we will never kill the beast. And so John Birch Society, they've been around for years and years, and you know I poke them in the eye. It's not about the act of poking them in the eye. It's about calling out the sin. Now, let's be clear here. We all need to stand. And let me just use this adage, right? United we stand, and our division is the cause for our failure. Because we know the last part of that. United we stand, divided we fall. And it is our division. We are so divided that is the reason why we are failing. And as a matter of fact, because we want people to come with our agenda, and as you know, you create that. As a matter of fact, one of the biggest problems I had, and I still have, and I will have, in going into organizations and getting them to create a uniting and welcoming environment for all patriots. Folks, we need all hands on deck. What that means is we need to call back those people that you've offended or they have offended you. But they're good people. They love this country and they want to see this country saved. They've just offended you. They may be a Republican. They may be a Libertarian. They may be a Constitution Party, an IAP. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. We have to start healing our own wounds. We have to start forgiving, and we have to start helping others forgive us. We need to take the high ground. That's how we unite. Now, does that mean that we have to be nice and say, well, the John Birch Society is a good organization? Or can we actually and honestly and objectively say, look at the John Birch Society. They are not trying to unite. They're not putting aside their organizational interest. I want you to understand this. As a person, you have your own self-interests. We're all WIFMs, what's in it for me? And when you create an organization that has its own self-interest first, if that interest is not for the betterment and acknowledging what is best, in other words, they're locked into, this is the course we go and we cannot change our course, then they are a part of the problem. Now, I can understand that there are people that have to put bread on the table, the people that have to survive. And I cannot say that, you know, you have to give up your job to be a part of this cause. But you can at least acknowledge and become a part of the cause in name. You can be a part of the cause and saying, I support this and endorsing this. This is what we need to do. There are lots of charlatans who are conservatives who are out there speaking on the airwaves that are just talking about this or that and how bad this is, and they're giving you all the sound bites for tomorrow. So that at the cooler, the water cooler, you can actually sound like, wow, that's a really good soundbite. And nobody knows where you got it from. Or everybody knows where you got it from because these people are becoming that popular. This is the cesspool of our division. If everybody can acknowledge that the Constitution is the solution, as we have proven time and time again, that the real problem is not the Constitution. The solution is the Constitution. The magic behind the Constitution is we the people have to demand it be enforced. We have to hold our public servants accountable. That's what we call enforcing. And so for us to succeed in uniting, it's all about demanding full compliance. And it's all about enforcing the letter and the spirit of the law. Period. No differences. And why is it that the John Birch Society, the Eagles Forum, and the 10th Amendment Center, and blah, 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 all of these organizations, all of these show hosts, all of these people who say they really care about America, they have to acknowledge that that right there is the key. The convention of state folks. Right? I mean, you'll hear me say that the Constitution needs some amendments. And actually, I kind of laugh at, you know, those who say the Constitution, you know, we don't need amendments. Actually, there are amendments that need to be done. But at this point in time, our real problem is the failure to enforce the Constitution. Once we get the enforcement of the Constitution, we can finally fine-tune it so that the states can actually take over a greater role and responsibility. Because bottom line, state oversight and citizen oversight, and actually good citizen oversight, county oversight, and state oversight is key to the solution. And it has to start with you. And it has to start with you and your county. Because you're not going to get, you know, one person that's going to be able to walk into your state legislative body and get things done. It requires a coordination amongst all of the counties to start actually creating and nurturing and developing people that want to be held accountable. We have a legion. We have a legion of public servants who do not want to be held accountable. They've never been held accountable, and they don't want to open that door now because they're this close to the trough to get their next million. Every person that goes to Congress becomes millionaires. Why wouldn't you want that? And every person you send to Congress, you think they're going to serve you. And actually what happens is they serve themselves. And we don't know how to hold them accountable. Well, that's because we can't even hold our county servants accountable. That's how important it is. This is why you need to be a part of the solution and start calling other organizations to become a part of the solution. If they can't agree with the enforcement of the Constitution, right? I mean, the COS folks, they actually say this. The JBS folks, they actually say this, but they're not committed to it. They're committed to something called nullification or this convention to amend. No, 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 no. Our priority must be enforcing and demanding full compliance, and it has to start at your local level. These are the facts, folks. This is irrefutable. Even though there's radio show hosts out there that say their argument cannot be broken because they don't actually acknowledge the facts, their foundation is cracked. Their foundation is flawed. So what we have to do to get away from these divisions is this is what has to happen. We've got to get over our differences. See, the framers had two things. They had two things going for themselves. They put aside their differences and they put aside their self-interest. But what does that mean, putting aside their differences? Well, they had to give up the myopic issue. They had to actually look at the bigger picture of what was best for all, making sure that everybody had individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and that this thing called this oath of office and containing, because they understood. I mean, they profoundly understood the problems of erecting a government. As a matter of fact, Madison was the one that said, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. This is in Federalist Paper 10. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. You know, I only use the Federalist Papers to get into these philosophical ideas. When it comes down to the nuts and bolts of the Constitution, the ratification debates are the only documents I use. But Madison was clear in saying that we don't have angels among us, and, you know, men aren't angels. So in framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed, and in the next place, oblige it to control itself. However, because at this point in time, they hadn't realized to create all these checks and balances, this is what he said. This, in addition to all of these things that we had to have, this obligatory to control themselves by this oath, a dependence on the people is no doubt the primary control on government. We have to hold them accountable. But experience has taught mankind the necessity of auxiliary precautions as well. And so the Constitution has so many beautiful auxiliary, these cautions and these requirements, like the enforcement can only be done by we the people. If you start understanding the Constitution, then we are literally in the clear to run the gamut on liberty and productivity and create an enlightened society once again. And what we're about to do, folks, in building upon that epoch that the framers created, what we're about to do is actually create a land of liberty and a globe of liberty. Because I believe when he comes, the second coming, will be based on liberty. And that all people will be equal participants in ensuring and guaranteeing liberty be preserved by having a limited and defined role of government. That there will be justice for all. That we will actually have a legal system that will actually have two separate legal systems. One of the governing law of the people and one of the spiritual law of the people. And they will actually be different courts. Because bottom line, under the Constitution, as we talk about this, and we will dive into this next week when we go into the Tory Acts, more on common law, you're going to see how we absolutely, under common law, should have a completely separate legal court system. And it needs to be one that is sustained by we the people. And how to do that is something that is, I don't want to say it eludes me, but it is not completely clear. This is why I'm really leaning on people that are real constitutionalists that have actually been into the Bar Association and realized it's corruption and that it is a part of the problem. And they have completely perverted our court system to be something far greater, trying to think that they can invoke common law into our government courts. That is not the truth, and we'll dive into that next week. But on Monday, I'm going to get back into how do we unite, and then we'll start talking about the scale of liberty and its importance in our focus on life moving forward. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.